I'd like to share some reflections on the theme of anger, drawing both on my personal experience and then trying to go wider than that to try to understand a little bit more about what I'm feeling and what I might be able to do about it. And maybe that's useful for other people. It'd be interesting to see what other people's experiences are with that, because I take it as a pretty universal kind of feeling. I don't know about you guys, but... So sometimes we say, well, I'm angry, something like that, and that's clearly from a Zen perspective an inaccurate way of describing what we're experiencing, that we're defined by much more than whatever feeling we have at any given time. It is, I am not my anger. There's anger arising. There are many other things, you know, about me and other people that are different from that anger. We know from, and I'm not an expert on neurophysiology at all, but interesting things are going on in body and mind when we get angry or have any sort of strong emotion. And almost it seems there's a battle between two parts of our brain, the amygdala, which is the seat of the sort of emotional reaction, and the prefrontal cortex, which is the executive function, the adult in the room. The moment I thought about that phrase, probably for very obvious reasons, I thought I would really like to see the brain of the American president. I imagine an amygdala, which is sort of like that, and a little prefrontal cortex. I wonder if it's there. It's looking, people come with a magnifying glass, you know. So it's, and anger is probably related to very basic fight-flight reactions, you know, to how we deal with emergency when we get and it could be at certain, you know, it may have certain uses at certain times. Now, a Zen approach, as far as, you know, a very incomplete student like me might see it, I thought there are several instances of things like this. A Zen master might ask, or if I say, I've been really angry, a Zen master might ask, well, show me your anger, bring me your anger, you know, sort of, you know, looking around, you know, I can't do that. I might be able to express angry feelings or angry thoughts, but my anger has no independent existence. It's contextual, and that takes us back to our sutras and other things that we're reading, and our practice principles about emptiness. That in a sense, the anger is empty, or it's a dream if we're looking at our past, because it doesn't have independent existence. That's my understanding of the, you know, the emptiness. And yet it's, of course, very important. And there are, depending on the group itself or its heritage, different versions and numbers of so-called precepts, sort of bodhisattva precepts, the way we ought to be behaving. And one of them, I think, even whether it's 16 or 10 or 8 or whatever, it really does vary, it seems, with different groups. I think probably anger is always included in it. So, and there are various ways of phrasing or translating whatever the earlier Indian, Chinese, and Japanese, and Korean ways of expressing it. Some are very bald, including some very well-known Western teachers who just say, you know, you know, don't be angry. It's very cut and dried kind of negative thing. Another way of putting it, which seems to be a little closer to some of the originals, but that you should not harbor or maintain anger, which seems to have a different quality than that, you know, that very, you know, this is just for Bolton kind of approach. And a very interesting one, which is closer to our own ordinary mind school, is by Diane Rosetto, who is a second-generation Dharma follower of Joko Beck, like a contemporary of Jeff's. And she has rephrased all of the precepts in a much more positive way, and in this case, that that I take up the way of letting go of anger, is the way she's suggesting we think of it. And she describes it as an invitation to explore our anger rather than a prohibition against anger. So, and again, that seems to me in keeping when I was thinking of, the Torah Zenji. So, you know, there's an opportunity here to deal with what's coming up, or the guest house, an uninvited guest that presents itself to it. These are opportunities. So Torah Zenji talks about someone who abuses you. That gives you the chance to grow, essentially. An uninvited guest, the same sort of thing. You don't know why. There may be a purpose for that, and that purpose may have to do with what you make of it, and that may have to do with how I'm learning to deal with what is a very natural emotion. So there seem to be many kinds of angers, perhaps. One basic distinction that Diane Rosetto makes is self-centered versus life-centered anger. So ego-driven, self-centered anger versus a more general life-centered anger, which might focus on reduction of suffering in a more general sense. So, for instance, anger at the government's treatment of asylum seekers, something like that. It may be quite appropriate to be angry. How you want to express that is another question. But I don't want to talk today, in this brief time that we have together, to talk about that life center. That's the more important kind of anger, in a sense. That is a call to some sort of action. But in a self-centered way, talk about self-centered anger. And it seems to me that actually breaks up into two kinds of anger. It's outward-driven anger, where you're angry at somebody else or some kind of situation, the driver who cuts you off or just the red light when in traffic, which seems to be prompted by clinging to a certain constructed sense of self-identity. I'm important. I've got to get to wherever I'm going. So, you know, I want green lights the whole way, and I don't want anybody, you know, cutting me off. So I'm somehow the victim of an outside injustice that's against me, and must correct that grievous wrong by giving the finger to the other driver or whatever it is, whatever good that does. And another type, which is what I guess I'm quite obsessed with, but it has to do with some of my own behaviors, self-centered, self-directed rather than other-directed anger. I find that I say some pretty nasty things to myself. I notice things I would hope I never say to anybody else, the way I sort of bawl myself out for failure to do something. And, of course, that also is related to some sort of constructed self-identity. I am late for my appointment today. I have no control over my life. I am a failure. I've done it again. Here I go. You know, that's sort of what a horrible, horrible person I am. And sort of end up beating myself up, terrible things that I do. So following the general advice that Diane Rosetto gives us, what's the practice or a practice of working with anger? How can we respond rather than react to to what is a very natural feeling that comes up? First step is a pretty obvious one. It's a little different in emphasis from some other things in accepting of what's coming up. Here we do have a prohibition of acting out. I mean, do not act out. Using a very strong negative here, or it can have some very bad consequences. Let's say you can cause suffering to other people as well as yourself by acting out, so to avoid that initial impulse. So that's very different then from a second step, which is essentially which is acceptance of that anger, not denying it. So not acting it out doesn't mean I'm not acknowledging my anger. So at the same time, it's sort of balancing two things, I think. Realize I'm angry, but not letting that cause suffering to other people and myself. than other steps that one might follow that are suggested by Diane and Jeff Dawson as well. First step of kind of mindfulness, a kind of self-awareness, what's going on in my mind and my body, followed by a further step of some sort of engagement or analysis with about this anger. What's triggering my anger? This is where the exploration comes in. What's going on, especially if it's repeated? And what kinds of thoughts do I have about my anger? Like, I'm a really bad person if I get angry. That's very common, especially probably among people of sort of spiritual inclinations, you know. Followed by a further step of kind of acceptance of, you know, acknowledging that, which we just mentioned before. Perhaps here's where the uninvited guest came in. You know, I didn't ask for this, but he showed up or she showed up at my front door. Anger showed up this morning. There are suggestions of taking this further. Thich Nhat Hanh talks about cradling your anger like a baby. As a really, you know, this it's a very valuable thing, a very natural thing. My own experience is it's difficult for me to think in that sort of compassionate term, but get partway to that at least and accept that's what's happening now. And in a more general sense, some sort of early warning system. What are the murmurings? Maybe I've gotten out of bed on the wrong side. I'm all this morning, or I'm feeling like I'm in a hurry, and that's often a trigger for me, you know, that something's going to blow up either inside or outside. So I've tried to run some experiments on myself. You know, one is the other-directed anger. So what's happening in terms of self-awareness, I get really tight down here. This is one place. Temples, another place. Shoulders, I get tense. And my mind gets very, very focused, kind of tunnel mind. All I want to do is correct that, you know, that harm that's been done to me. And usually there's some blame, you know, aimed at the agents of that wrong. When does it happen? So the engagement or the analysis with it. Mealtime phone calls are one of the things that really bug me, especially, you know, when they're trying to sell me something, and just I get very close to losing it. So, and then feel terribly bad, then whip myself about, you know, that's not the way to do it. Then trying to deal with it, if not cradling it, at least accepting that this is a very familiar feeling here, and it provides me with a challenge for the future. And one can, Diane Rosetto talks about creating, or we might say even taking advantage of things that come up by themselves, of these moments to challenge oneself to deal with the anger. So having a conversation with someone who makes you angry or something like that, picking up, or the moment I pick up the phone and hear it's that kind of call, trying to then alter my behavior, put myself in a position, aha, this is the opportunity to work with that uninvited guest instead of hanging up or telling them to shut up or something like that. And also being aware of what precedes it, these early warning or murmurings that come about. often it's an unrelated event. The boss has yelled at me, and boy, the next thing I'm going to do, you know, shows my frustration with that. So that's that other directed. And finally, then, my second experiment is more with myself, the self-directed, self-centered anger. Same kind of body sensations. I recognize my tensions very easily these days, and they just manifest in various kinds of tense situations for me. Self-directed, self-centered anger for me is often triggered by a lack of attention, we call it even a mindlessness about what's preceding it. I don't leave enough time to get to my engagement. I forget to take my phone or whatever it is. It's a lack of, you might say, a lack of planning, lack of being mindful. Moving on to then the acceptance with trying to breathe into the feeling, holding it, if not cradling it at least, saying, here I go again. This is pretty familiar territory to me. How can I work with it? What are the opportunities that I have? There may be situations to either test oneself to once one feels a little bit more confident in that. Make that call to the bank that you've been putting off because you know what's going to happen. But prepare. I can prepare myself. It's pretty predictable that something's going to go wrong, and somebody's some stupid person on the other end. But it's really a question of my reaction. So how can I prevent myself from getting sucked into this? So preparing. What do I need for any events, for going out or to make a phone call? Do I need the information there because they're going to ask me my PIN number or something that I don't remember? And to be as a little bit of short meditation and anything that's grounding. And then often, looking back again, as in the other directed one, what are the early warning signs that this may happen? And usually for me, a lot of it has to do with feeling I'm behind schedule or, I've got a rush and that then cascades from that.